Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Advice Show. I'm Zach, a reporter at New Model Advisor, and I'm joined here with my deputy editor at NMA, Jack Gilbert. And today we're talking about the 34 private equity-backed advice firms and how they performed in 2022. We're joined today by Brian Hill, Head of Strategic Exit at acquisitions broker The Exit Partnership. Brian, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Jack, thanks so much for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
We published a piece last week, which our listeners can find on the New Model Advisor website, where we compiled a database and analysis of all the 34 private equity-backed firms. First of all, Jack, I'd like to bring you in and just could you explain to me the process of compiling this database and, you know, all the analysis we've received, as well as some of the reaction?
Yeah, thanks, Zach. Certainly. I mean, it was a timely exercise. It took many hours sitting in front of spreadsheets and going through the data, and at times it felt like it was never going to get published because there's always things were changing and new things we were finding. So it was a very long process. But essentially what we did, so it was four of us, so yourself, Zach, helped with it, Alicia and Celine and myself, we all worked on it. And it was an actual follow-up piece to analysis we did last year, where we looked at the 29, as it was then, private investment-backed advice firms. We followed up this year by basically doing the exercise all over again to see how things had changed from the last time we did the research. So for a start, we found that since the last time we did it, there's five new private investment-backed consolidators or advice firms had joined the list. And then it was just a question of going through the data, picking out what had happened since we last did the research to look at things like acquisition numbers, what had changed from their businesses in terms of adding new vertical integration, white label platforms or DFMs, any other kind of new events for new financing, new private equity firms coming in or backing these businesses. To really try and get under the skin of these firms and find out what was going on and how 2022 looked for these businesses. So it was a very lengthy process. It took kind of several months really to go through it all. But I think since we published it has had a good reaction, and it's been pleasing to see some of the responses we've had from people. And obviously, you know, any readers out there, please email us to tell us if you think it was a terrible piece.
Absolutely. I think that what really struck me as well when we were writing it was the pace of change. As you said, you know, every week it seemed that we could add more. And I think it was said the other day that if we wanted to, we could just keep doing this forever.
Exactly. Yeah, it was one of those processes where there's always more things you can add to it. I mean, I think one of the key differences we did this time around was we got someone within Citywire who's, you know, very good at data, much better than I am, to pick out FCA register data, look at the number of advisors at these businesses. So we were able to compare how many advisors each private equity backed business had the start of 2022 and the end of 2022. And it's not a perfect barometer because, you know, I'm sure Brian could talk about this, but because advisors are retiring and things, but I think the number of advisors that a PE backed advice firm has is a good indicator of how much presence, how much market share that firm has. So that really gave us a good indication about how much growth these firms saw in 2022. And some firms saw, you know, rapid growth. They saw, you know, the number of advisors go up by 70-100% during the year. But then three firms actually saw their number of advisors decrease during the year. And there was, I think, about six who saw less than 10% growth.
And I want to bring in Brian at this point, if I can. You're well placed to tell us about the process of buying and selling. First of all, what was your immediate takeaway from the piece? And did the analysis reflect what you're seeing on the ground?
Thanks, Zach. Yeah, this piece of analysis was really interesting when we looked at it. And it, as Jack said, it built on last year's data. And it probably raises more questions than it answers in many ways. But one of the key aspects being behind the scenes on this is that not all PE firms are the same. And there's I ran a straw poll on a Facebook group I'm a member of just this morning, and by no means is it representative of the financial advisor community. You know, it's only about 30 or 40 advisors replied, but 80% didn't think that PE acquisitions was good for clients. 20% said the jury was out, and nobody thought it was a good idea. So there's really a huge misunderstanding by advisors as to what PE looks like. If you have a PE-backed firm, what actually happens there? And it seems that many of them think it's just a really bad idea. Now, being behind the scenes, actually, we get to see both, you know, all the good, the bad, and the ugly as well. They're not all built the same at all. And they've all got very different objectives. They're all funded in very different ways. They've got different integration plans, and they seek different outcomes for their for the firms that are looking to acquire. So out of the 34 there, you're going to get, because you've seen one PE firm, be a PE-backed firm, doesn't mean that they're all the same. You're going to get 34 different versions of that same thing. That makes for a really interesting marketplace.
That's interesting. One question, Brian. I mean, I think that's a fair point on the kind of all this PE houses being different. But surely, aren't they all looking for the same thing ultimately? Aren't they all looking for a payout in, you know, 3, 5, 7 years, whatever, however many years it's going to take? Surely they're all looking for the same end goal.
Yeah, often they will have a 5 to 7 year runway, if you like. But generally speaking, there are two different types of PE-backed firm. You've got the, let's call it maybe the conveyor belt type of aggregator. They just want to gather funds under management, and that's their key focus. Funds under management, cut costs, advisor out as quickly as possible, replaced perhaps by a lightweight advisor process, if you like, maybe remote based. You know, the main thing there is cutting costs and adding recurring revenue. So you've got the conveyor belt aggregator type. And there's nothing wrong with that in itself if you're already running that type of business as an advisor. But if you're not running that type of business, then clients and staff are probably going to have a bit of a cognitive dissonance if you try and sell out to that type of PE-backed firm. But you also then get what we would call the buy and build type of PE-backed firms. And often you'll see with these, and this is how it ties into the data that Jack was talking about, you'll see increases in numbers of advisors who are joining. Now, one of the challenges with the data, just reflecting on that, is that it doesn't always show, and it'd be quite difficult to do that, I expect, quite difficult to show which advisors came over from acquired firms and which advisors they've got there, which are just grown organically, let's say. But those firms in the buy and build type of PE-backed firms are looking for strong management teams and looking to build hubs, which then acquire spoke firms within them. And actually, they're looking to keep the high quality of advice that those firms have got. They're looking to keep that, to retain that, very, very focused on consumer duty, very focused on the value that's brought. And one of these PE-backed firms, and I won't mention who it is, remunerate their staff based on the what we call a passionate advocacy score that clients give them. So based on clients' reviews, the staff the staff bonus, the advisor's bonus, and the other staff employees' bonus is based on how well the clients feel they're being looked after. And that's very brave, and it's a very, very strong value proposition. So and on the other side, you get those PE-backed firms that perhaps don't care quite as much. So there's a huge variety there, Zach, right across the board.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate, you know, you explaining differences in private equity backed firms and what they're looking for. But as we sort of said, you know, growth is the aim of the game, really, for both types, for the buy and build and your sort of conveyor belt, let's gather an AUM together. We saw that, you know, some of the largest firms saw this acquisition growth slow. I was wondering what your thoughts were on why that is the case. And whether firms may have grown too quickly, as it were.
Yeah, one of the key findings within the report really was the amount of debt the PE firms have behind them. And, you know, some of that can be, seems to be quite expensive. So what we are finding is that there are less PE-backed firms coming into the space. There's another 5 that are being added, but we don't see...
Name them at all, Brian? Any names there?
So there's, I think if people go to the excellent table that Jack and the team, you guys have put together, they can see on there. But yeah, there are a number of, out of those new PE back firms that are coming in, we don't really see that they're going to increase significantly. I'll be surprised if there is another five next year. But the ones that we come across, they've got that 5 to 7 or longer year time frame. One thing that came out was that can come out is, you know, where people say, well, they're not profitable, or that they've lost money. Don't forget that the PE firms don't just have financial advice in their portfolio. Very often they'll have other types of firm in there, which may well impact their profitability. So I think that's a useful but not a directional metric on there. But one of the key things that we're seeing, again, we did a webinar with Emma G just a couple of weeks ago, and we, again, there was probably just under 500 advisors on board there. We asked the question, who's thinking of who's going to be exiting within the next 5 years? 50% of those advisors on that call were thinking we're going to be exiting in the next 5 years. That's 60 paydays, 50% are looking to exit. So what we're going to find is that there's potentially less big buyers coming in, and there's more people looking to sell. So actually, we might well find that instead of having lots of buyers for each seller, as we have at the minute, we're going to have far fewer buyers and far more sellers. So we could be looking at a bit of a sea change in the next 2 to 5 years, I would have thought. And that's going to be key where the PE firms are going to be concerned. They're really going to look to establish their hubs over the next 2 years as these firms are looking at exiting.
And I think I'll just come in there a second, Brian. I mean, one of the things we spoke to a few people about, who kind of all agree really that we will see consolidation among the consolidators, so that some of the PE-backed consolidators will start to buy the others. I guess part of that is just a scale question of, you know, to get to where they want to be, buying small IFAs is only going to get you so far. You need to make some big acquisitions. And because there's such a plethora of firms now that kind of doing those bigger acquisitions of your peers is pretty much the only way to go about getting to some of the targets that they've set themselves. Do you think that's going to happen, this kind of consolidation of consolidators? Do you think it's going to happen soon, or do you think we're going to see this in a few years' time?
I do think it's going to happen. And I do think it's going to happen over the next couple of years. I don't think we're going to wait 5 years to see it. I think we're going to see some consolidation in the marketplace. And what we are finding is the small IFA, the really small, if you like, micro IFA, where they've got less than 20 million about funds under management, assets under management, that they're really going to struggle to sell because there's so much work involved in acquiring even just the assets of a firm, that, you know, there are easier fish to fry than that. So we're going to see some consolidation at the top end over the next couple of years, almost certainly. We're going to see some of those PE firms reach the point where they need to they've achieved momentum, they've achieved their goal, and they're then going to sell perhaps to the next level of PE. And that's just natural. There's nothing for people to be really that worried about. It's just a quite normal state of affairs with PE. And PE brings a lot of advantages to businesses as well. It's not such a negative thing that people need to be so worried. That doesn't mean they shouldn't do their due diligence, of course. Advisors need to really, when they're looking at potentially being acquired by a PE firm or a PE-backed firm, is to do their own due diligence. One of the key things there, and I appreciate I'm going off piste slightly here, but it might be useful just to understand the metrics of how some PE firms work, is that when they are acquiring, are they targeted on the money which is available, or are they targeted on the money that's spent? There's a key difference there. So if they're targeted on the money that's spent, you're going to find that as they get toward the end of their reporting quarter, they're going to be potentially scrabbling around to find firms to buy. And so a PE firm which is targeted on money spent, it's probably a good argument to say that, you know, is the quality there on the firms that they're buying, as opposed the other way around, on firms where the money is available, they haven't spent it, they're still measured on it. Whereas if they're just measured on how it's spent, then you're probably going to get a higher quality of acquisitions. You may get a higher quality of acquisitions with that. But we're going to see consolidation at the top end over the next couple of years, I expect. And the PE firms becoming more choosy as to who they are looking at having in their portfolio.
Yeah. And, you know, bringing in Consumer Duty for a second as well, we spoke about the integration or lack of, in some firms' case, among some of these consolidators. Do you think this will pose a problem for the rules if you've got different fee models, different charging structures, with and how that all, you know, tallies up with fair value and proving that you've done this across all of your, models?
Yeah. Consumer Duty just highlights the importance of integration and acquisitions. You know, for an advising firm to say, look, whenever I'm bought, I want everything to stay the same. I want the fees to stay the same. I want the investment philosophy to stay the same. I want, you know, it's just not realistic. You know, you've been acquired by a firm which is much bigger, and they're not going to suddenly change everything or to match your own firm. And they're certainly not going to do that. You know, you're going to get a lot of synergies. If you don't have a lot of synergies, then perhaps you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. But, you know, 70-80% similarity is going to be similar. And Consumer Duty is absolutely, you know, one of the number one aspects to look at from the buying firm. Now, as sellers are going along, they're looking at this, they need to look and see, you know, is the fee structure going to be similar? Is the way they look after clients similar? We have a phrase at the Exit Partnership, which is culture before cash. Culture before cash. So look at the culture. How do they look after clients? Do they look after them in a similar way? Is the fee structure kind of similar? And what this will help people do is, sellers do, is to have a focus on how they segment their clients and where's the value that they provide for clients. And what we find over time is that the firms which are easiest to integrate are those that have a simple standardized service, which delivers a service to their clients consistently and profitably, and is valued by their clients. And if you can get those to meet up, to match between the PE firm and the seller, that's got to be a good thing. But some advisors are, you know, haven't really given much thought to Consumer Duty. Many have. It's going to be really, really important to work out post-integration, for the post-integration period, how clients are not disadvantaged and how they're advantaged by the Consumer Duty that sits within both the buyer and the seller.
Well, just on that integration point, Brian, I had a conversation with Paul Feeney the other day, who's former CEO of Quilter, now is going to Skerritz to lead that PE-backed venture. He was essentially saying he was shocked by how little integration he had seen amongst some of the consolidators who he was speaking to before he went to Skerritz. He was basically saying that they'd been so much, you know, land grabbing, he called it, where, you know, IFA has been bought up by the consolidators, but there'd been no post-acquisition integration of those firms. There was different fee models, different technology, different investment propositions, different platforms being used. I just wondered if that tallied up with what you're seeing in the market. Has there been a real lack of integration among some of these 34 firms?
Some of these firms, yes, they will. That their view is just keep doing what you're doing. You know, they'll do the due diligence and say just keep doing what you're doing in terms of the fee structure, the investment philosophy, compliance, and such like. The FCA are just not so keen on that. They've made that very clear. They're just not so keen on that. You know, if you were thinking of running a different business, you're running, I don't know, restaurants. If you've got one local pizza parlor, if that's what it's called, you've got one high-end restaurant, you've got another one that's a cafe by the side of the road, it makes it very, very difficult to run those restaurants. And the same really applies to financial advice firms. the idea that you can run a successful business and everybody is doing their own thing, I just don't think works at all. You know, they need to have consistency. And just going back to that, what I was saying before, simple standardized services deliver consistently to clients that value it. You can't, it's extremely difficult to deliver something consistently if everyone's doing something different. So that alignment, as Puffini was saying, absolutely needs to happen. I'm quite sure that in two things. Number one, a financial advisor, selling financial advisor, would be quite naive to think that the PE firms or the PE-backed firms or any acquirer is going to leave things as they are. They're just not. It just makes no commercial sense to do that at all. You know, they need to be seen from the same hymn sheet. And a PE-backed firm or otherwise thinking that they should just leave things as they are. Again, they're going to miss out on the economies of scale, and they're going to miss out on the commercialities of scale as well. So that post-sale integration needs to look at how you can have consistency of service delivered for clients right across the board. And I'm quite sure that we need to see a sea change on that, don't we? That has to change.
Well, that seems like a great note to end on. You know, Brian, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. This has been fascinating. And thank you so much, Jack, as well. You've been listening to The Advice Show with myself, Brian Hill of The Exit Partnership, and Deputy Editor Jack Gilbert of New Model Advisor. For any questions, please feel free to tweet us at New Model Advisor or email us at nmateam@citywire.co.uk. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.